Lee Cantor with Stone Payton here in another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. How are you doing, Stone?
I am doing well. A little bit chilly, and that walk gets tougher and tougher from the parking garage by what? Is that going to be like streetcar? What's
right.
the deal
the
down here?
The streetcar will be going right by us, and I'm sure ringing a bell or something to help us out in our work here in the studio.
But other than that, I like the downtown studio. I like the coffee across the street. I like the vibe. It's a different vibe here than
That's
it is
right.
in the suburbs.
It's always something to see when we walk from the car to the studio. That's for sure.
And always something good to hear when we do disruptive healthcare. This is going to be a very special segment. We're going to get a chance to visit with Delise Lindsay with Well Change Group. And we're also going to get a chance to talk with Tricia Dempsey with TAG Health Society and Agile. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So, Delise, give us a little bit of a feel for what Well Change is all about. What's the mission and purpose there?
Well, Well Change is a consulting firm that helps organizations retain
Just jump right in there.
Okay. business results during a time of change. And I describe myself as a consultant to senior leadership and an advocate for their people.
Now, Tricia, the TAG Health Society and Agile, can you talk about that?
Sure. I'm here to actually represent two organizations. One is TAG Health and the society that is getting ready to put on a career fair here in Atlanta. And my company is called Agile. We're an innovative IT staffing and consulting firm.
So let's start first with the TAG Health and this job fair, because that's an important thing. I know we've heard a lot of times that, you know, you hear in the news that unemployment rates are super high, but in some areas unemployment rates aren't super high.
I think one of the big misnomers right now in the marketplace because of the news is that there's not a lot of people out there that are able to find employment. And in the IT sector, we're really at full employment loads. Our typical candidate has multiple opportunities, multiple offers, and one of the hottest segments that we're seeing in today's market is in healthcare IT.
Right. Now, is it getting to the point where now companies kind of have to grow their own employees and have to really support kind of infrastructure?
That's a great question. I think anytime there becomes a shortage, companies have to get creative about how they find that talent. So We are seeing companies who are training them up from scratch. We are seeing really unique programs in Atlanta, and Delise can certainly talk about some of these, that are really certifying people in healthcare IT. And so there's a lot of kind of quick hit types of opportunities for candidates who've historically been in finance or another industry to very quickly be brought up to speed in the healthcare space.
Yeah, you want to talk about that, Delise, how that happens?
Sure. We have, there's a consortium out there between education and industry and government to help build and grow this HIT workforce. And there are a couple of the academic institutions that are meeting this short-term need that Trish talked about. One of them is Southern Polytech that has a six-week program to run people through very quickly.
Now, are these people, are they high school graduates? Are they college graduates? What level of skill do they have to have? In order to be enrolled in the program?
They are vetted, and they would need to have a college
degree,
experience,
right,
and some IT experience.
Uh-huh.
And then we also have a grant out there, a federal grant that's been awarded to Georgia Tech and Gwinnett Tech, a $1.6 million grant. And Gwinnett Tech just launched this week their certification program for health information technology.
Wow.
And so how do you decide what to teach? How do you decide what's in the curricula? Employers are coming to you and saying, we're trying to produce these kinds of products and provide these kinds of services down the road, and then you guys consult to them on the
curriculum. Because you know how, like, in college, historically, they teach what they teach, and then theoretically the kid, when they're done, they have some skills, and then they go to a company and work. Is it more you would think in today's world that it would be more collaborative where – the companies are saying, you know what, I need them to be able to do these 10 things, so make sure that that's part of the curriculum.
That's correct. They before they developed both of these programs, there were focus groups pulled together from industry, academia, and government so that they are targeting the skill sets and the needs of the marketplace in these fast-track programs.
So this seems like a kind of a game-changing kind of, at least a change in the thought process about how education and business and everybody plays together.
Yes. And they're also, and this is what we're talking about now, is a short-term, filling that short-term gap. But the Department of Education has realized that we need to prepare students down in the secondary level.
Right.
So there's an effort going on now to build a health information technology curriculum into the public school sector.
And that, when you said department, is that federal or is that state?
The state.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that's important to note, or a statistic that would be important to note, is there's about 108,000 health IT professionals in the United States. In the next 3 years, they'll need an additional 40,000. That's a lot of the workforce that will need to be trained.
And then how, is that only in Georgia?
That's United States. That's nationwide.
So what advice, if any, would you share with someone in a completely different career, and they see the writing on the wall, they see the opportunity, and they say, you know what, I think I'm going to take a shot at this. I'm going to make the transition to this arena. What are some do's and some don'ts maybe that you might share with someone like that?
That's a great question.
Yes, it
that
is.
That was a really good question.
It was an excellent question, Stone.
I commend you for that. Thank you.
You know, we one of the things that we take a candidate through is what we call a personal marketing plan at Agile. We're IT staffing and consulting. And as we interview candidates, we take them through this personal marketing plan. And the first part of that is really to help them identify what they're really looking for. So demographically, if they were to slice and dice the millions of jobs that are out there, what kind of job are they really looking for? Because health IT is a very big beast.
Right.
And the second thing we help them to do is really identify the companies that they would like to go after. And then I think we really want them to understand the gap between what they currently have today and what they're really going after. And so, you know, we suggest anything ranging from going through one of these programs at Southern Poly or Gwinnett Tech, really getting engaged in the healthcare IT community, because most of these jobs in IT, and if I a little bit get a chance to talk about the top hot skills in health IT, are very transferable from other places, from finance and from whatever.
So if you invest in that, even that 6-week program, you're going to be able to use that somewhere along the line in your career. That's going to be time well spent, right?
Definitely.
Now, is this 6-week program, is that like I'm stopping what I'm doing and I'm going there full time, or is this something that I do after hours in the evenings, weekends, online?
It's interesting. Southern Polytech is on Saturday, and Gwinnett Tech is online. So they're meeting the needs of that non-traditional student.
So that seems like a win-win all the way around. I mean, that's a tough thing to pass up if you're in this space, right?
Definitely. And I think one of the things we did recently was, if you take a look at any of the job aggregators like Simply Hired, Indeed, if you look at all the health IT jobs, here's the things that we've kind of identified. And I'll have a white paper that I can post out to your website later.
That'd be great.
There's about 100,000 health IT jobs. 66% of those are permanent jobs versus contract jobs.
Right.
50% require a bachelor's degree. So these are minimum requirements. 61% of them require 5 years or less of experience, and 28% require 10 plus or more. So it is the health IT candidate of the future is already in the workforce today. They just really are getting additional skills to be able to make them effective.
They don't know it yet.
That's right. They don't know it yet. And the other thing they don't know is they don't know how to position themselves to get those jobs.
Right. And then this 6-week, this 6-week certification seems to be just, that's like almost nothing in the scope of a career,
don't
you think?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. It sure is.
So I mean, I'm blown away that they're able to pull off something that got blessed by all parties here, and then it's going to enable somebody to really make themselves a lot more employable.
Yeah, and I think that program, and Delise knows a lot more about it than I do, but I think Hamid Arjman from Southern Poly, you know, I went through my undergrad at Georgia State, went through my master's at Georgia State. And when I got my master's degree, it had that more peer-to-peer.
Right.
We already had experience. You know, we were coming to the table and we were actually sitting down with our teachers and we understood. They understood what our challenges were. And we can say, hey, we're seeing that today.
And you're getting real-life examples, not like this theoretical thing that happened.
I think that's what the colleges and universities are really trying to do with students who already have this experience in the workforce today.
Mm-hmm. I can also tell you, with the $1.6 million grant through Georgia Tech and Gwinnett Tech, that they're targeting veterans and the misemployed and the unemployed.
What does misemployed mean?
Someone that might be underemployed. They've taken a job just to have income into the household, but it is beneath their skill set and their level of experience, but they've taken something short term.
Right, because of the just where they're at, they couldn't find something in their sweet spot. And this will allow them another swing of the bat there and to make them more attractive, I would think.
Exactly. And when I'm out there educating the potential workforce about opportunities in health information technology, I always share that I believe that there's going to be enough opportunity in health information technology to take all of us through the rest of the life of our career. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go away, and it's going to be ever-changing.
To me, it's one thing to get an effort like this started and get everyone fired up about it, and it's a cool story. But to sustain it, that's what fascinates me, is you have really begun to sustain this effort. You must have cracked the code on that.
You know, I was telling Delise when we first met that when our company got into business back in 2003, it was a tough time. It was post 9/11. There weren't a lot of jobs, and you really had to go scrounge to get opportunities to work on. And we started getting into healthcare back in 2003. And so we've been doing that for about 10 years, and we haven't really seen a slowdown in that industry. And so I think it's more, I think people hear about it on the news, but it's really more educating people about not only the drivers of what's increasing opportunities in that business now, but what the future looks like in that space, and so that they get an opportunity to really dedicate their time and their efforts on building their skills in that space.
Now, do you see with all this new online learning, there seems to be a new online academy popping up? You know, you can learn to code at Code Academy, or you can go to Udemy and Coursera, and you can take all these courses taught by the smartest people, you know, a lot of smart people. Do you think that there's going to be a shift of especially younger people who are dabbling in this and they're just acquiring this knowledge, which theoretically that's what college is supposed to prepare you, you know, to give you this knowledge, but now they're getting it and they're not paying for it. And do you think employers are going to be able to take some of these people that maybe don't have a traditional college degree, but they have the knowledge, and then give them an opportunity to actually get the practical knowledge, and then that's going to flip the whole college and university experience on its head, I would think.
I always have thought that that's been one of the most unique things about IT is that, you know, the majority of our candidates are still going to have bachelor's degrees, but there's so many certifications and quick hit types of things that get them kind of prepared for the workforce. We're even working with a company called Infinium, who is in the data warehousing space, who is taking people out of their church who really want to transition from a career, or they've been in IT and they want to transition into specifically around data warehousing. And they're doing these Saturday boot camps with them. And we interviewed 5 of those candidates yesterday and were blown away by how much they had grown in that short period of time. So I think IT has always been unique from that perspective, because you can go get an A+ certification, you get a good Microsoft certification, and you're pretty much ready for business.
Right. And you as the employer, you don't care, right? I mean, like, if you're comparing, this person went to Princeton and maybe was like a goof off. Or you have this other person who went to
all those goof offs at Princeton,
right? You know, look, I'm just saying hypothetically. You have him; he has the kind of the brand name degree, and then you have this person that's highly motivated and focused and went through this church boot camp.
Yeah,
and you got to hire somebody.
I think there are certainly the employers who like certain and even specific colleges and universities. I don't think we'll ever get away from that. But I also think that if I talk to my customers about what they're really looking for, it a lot of times has less to do with the skills and more to do with the soft skills, the people skills, the interaction with others, the ability to play nice in the sandbox. All those things are really skills that they can get, you hope, anywhere in life.
And also what we're seeing there is that it depends upon the purchaser of the talent. The providers, the hospitals, the physician practices are holding more fast to finding someone with the certification and with healthcare experience.
Right.
Where the technology firms, the HIT consulting firms, the back office support are more likely to hire someone with pure IT and then, to your point, train them through their own internal boot camps on their particular systems.
That's very true.
Because that they feel, well, obviously, if in a 6-week class on Saturdays you can get a certain level of skill, that's worth a lot of companies' time to be implementing that themselves internally.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So I'd like to dive into the work a little bit in both organizations, and let's start with WellChange. Speak a little bit to the day-to-day work of WellChange and what you find yourself doing on engagements. And if you would, include in that kind of how an engagement unfolds.
Well, it's I actually got into this space from the change, the people side of change with the implementation of electronic medical records. Uh-huh. And what I'm understanding is the providers are doing an excellent job of implementing the technology and integrating the technology, but they're not so much paying attention to the end user. Uh-huh. And patient safety, patient quality, the retention of that healthcare professional are all business cases for paying attention to the people side of change during an implementation.
So people freak a little bit when you implement something as large as EMR. I mean, that's huge, right?
It is,
I mean,
huge.
That changes roles, responsibility. I mean, everything.
Right? Yes,
and
yes.
The people thing just might have some impact on that, right?
Exactly, and which then ultimately impacts the patient, which is where we're really concerned about. That is the impact to the patient. If the clinician is not comfortable with the implementation of the change and the new technology, it's ultimately going to impact the outcome of the patient experience. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a tall order.
I had real life example. I had a mother-in-law that passed away in November with ovarian cancer. And I remember they had just implemented the new EMR in the hospital system. And so every time they'd come into a room and they would turn on the machine and they would pound it out and something would get stuck, it would be like, we can't give her this aspirin until we log it into the system. And now we're going to have to. And I mean, I think it's, you know, there's a lot of frustration. You can see it on their faces when mm-hmm. they're using it in the hospitals. And then I have, you know, Dr. James Morrow used to be my doctor in Cumming, and he's been EMR before it was even cool. And so I used to feel it was very impersonal. The nurse would come down, sit down, and type into the computer, yes, and what are you allergic to? And blah, and I was like, where's the interaction with me as the patient? And so I think I think people either embrace it really wholeheartedly or they, you know, they're very frustrated by it. And I think that's where change management comes mm-hmm. extremely important in the adoption of it and being able to really improve. It's really about the patient experience. Yes. And in both of those cases was not necessarily great and impacted by the technology.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. I'll give you my own example with that. My mom died 6 years ago from bladder cancer, and I was in the hospital for the last 30 days. So I saw they had a book that's the size of like 3 phone books.
That's right.
And there was like 14 doctors, and they'd each go back 3 pages, see what the other person said, and then they'd make their new assessment and put another page in the book. Mm-hmm. And just I don't see how – I mean, I'm not a medical person at all, but I was saying, how inefficient is this? How can they mine the data to see if they're missing something historically over the last month or two? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're just going back a handful of pages and just seeing what the last guy did, how can you really serve that patient? And I think the data mining aspects of it, of the, you know, digitizing this kind of information has got to be a huge opportunity.
But that's logic, though, and you're dealing with people, right? It mm-hmm. makes perfect logical sense. Of course mm-hmm. it's better for the system, but you got to get it through the people.
Well, and I think one of the biggest skill sets that we're seeing a demand for in 2013 is really around healthcare analytics and kind of data architecture of those healthcare analytics. So if I have a hospital system, how do I get that fed in with my doctor's system? How do I get that fed in with my medical history? How do I get that fed in with this? And then how can I really treat the patient better with the data?
Right. And especially in a hospital setting where, like, my mom, I think she had 14 different doctors, you know, looking at her, how can they – it's not like they're getting in a room together and chatting about this. You know, they're each looking at the same record. And if mm-hmm. the record is paper and it's scribbled notes, mm-hmm. you know – that's not exactly
that's
optimal,
right.
I wouldn't think.
That's right.
But there's another level of this adoption we've been talking about from a physician's
right.
And from the clinician standpoint, but it's the patient adoption mm-hmm. of the new technology,
right.
Great point.
Particularly with the telehealth. And I'll share my example. My mother, who is 89 years old, lives with me, uh-huh. and she has a telehealth monitor. And she is able to take her blood pressure every morning by herself, and the data is transferred into the home health company. And it's been amazing to watch my mom be able to use this technology at 89 years
That's
old.
Fantastic.
And it walks her through step by step.
Right.
It gives her suggestions on how to lower her blood pressure. And it's been amazing. You know, I'm kind of in this space and I hear about it, but I've actually have a
And
piece
you get
of
to
this.
See it.
I get to
with
see
your
it
eyes.
In action.
I'm
yes.
convinced companies like Apple's target the 90-year-old plus market because my husband's grandmother Faye loves her iPad and is not a moment away from it most days, but yeah, I think that's a really fascinating
Right, and you see
real
that,
story.
Well, and now more and more people, like younger people, have those kind of devices that they're hooking up to themselves just to keep track of their fitness and stuff.
Right.
You know that that's just the entry point for
that's
all
right.
the other stuff.
Well, even at our Tag Health Summit earlier this year, we had students from all the high schools, or a lot of high schools mm-hmm. around the state of Georgia, developed diabetic? Mm-hmm. Diabetes applications, mm-hmm. apps on their phone, and they did a contest, and one of the high schools
cool.
actually won the contest. But here they are in the 9th, 10th grade already designing apps to take better care of
well, because they're using apps every day. I mean,
totally.
That's just like their pad of paper and pencil.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
This telehealth thing, to me, this rocks, because if you grow up on 8 Mile Creek Road like I did, and you want to get your doctor wants to get a consultation
right.
from somebody, that's now possible, right? That's mm-hmm. a very practical thing, and you guys can make that happen now, yeah?
Yes, definitely.
I think that's one of the challenges of rural health care in general, mm-hmm. is being
yeah.
able to get the type of care that you can get in the city of Atlanta down in Ludowice, Georgia. So, I think it's going to be the new movement
great.
For us in the future.
But mm-hmm. I think it's exciting, the telehealth, where you have those like kind of day-to-day stuff like blood pressure and then maybe like EKG or something like that that they can just do over the phone just in mm-hmm. a kind of a painless, seamless way that doesn't require them going to the doctor to get that check.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Where it can just happen over the phone lines. That's crazy.
Right. Well, I was a cancer patient in 2003, a breast cancer patient, and when I was deciding on what hospital to get my treatment at, Emory was recommended as the best hospital by far, and there was a doctor there that was a world-renowned breast cancer specialist. But the thought of driving to Emory, I just couldn't do it.
Right, that was like yeah. a deal killer.
So
right.
The very best care right. that I needed potentially, and I would say I got amazing care, Georgia cancer specialist. But the very best care I needed was an hour and 15 minutes on a good day in traffic, and I couldn't imagine doing that. Mm. 2-3 times a week, there was no
right.
way.
Right.
So,
yeah, but this seems like it's becoming more and more integrated into at least an option for patients now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So is Georgia and Atlanta just that much better at all this? Are they that much better at letting folks know that we're doing it? Because it's our understanding, if we're to believe guests who have come through here in the last several weeks, Georgia, Atlanta is like number one in mm-hmm. health IT.
Mm-hmm.
Speak
exciting.
To that a little bit. Yeah.
It's exciting.
But why? First of all, is it true and why?
Oh, it is true, and because we have a cluster of close to 250 health IT-related companies right here in Atlanta. And also I have to put a plug in for the Metro Atlanta Chamber.
I was just about to say
yeah.
the same thing.
and their marketing, their nationwide marketing to blast to the nation that we have the concentration, and we lead the nation in health information technology, as well as we have the CDC here and Georgia Tech and over 20 incubators located here. I heard a percentage of the amount of data from David Hartnett just this week, and the percentage escapes me, but there is a large percentage of data around the globe that actually passes through Metro Atlanta.
Right.
And so, yes, we are justified in letting the world know that we're the leader in health information technology.
Yeah, we employ over 16,000 health IT professionals out of that 108 I just mentioned. So,
and that's good for your business, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about Agile and how you guys are playing in the marketplace?
Yeah, so we are a IT staffing and consulting firm that really helps companies speed their time to top talent. And we do that by matching great people with great opportunities in a couple of core areas. And one of the things that we realized, in the last couple of years is when we look at the concentration of our customers, almost 30% of our customer base is in health IT. So I've said, we've been doing it before it was even cool. And
did you set out to do it, or you were doing it and then it just kind of,
I think
noticed after the fact, like, hey, 30% is...
it was originally, like most things, I was kind of, you take a look back and you're like, wow, I think we really... underestimated the concentration of customers that we had. And I don't know if it was that was because those are the customers that are hiring people in Atlanta,
right.
or there was some deliberate efforts toward that. I think this year we're really taking a deliberate effort toward expanding our reach in the health IT market, because I think we're uniquely positioned to be able to be the leader in the IT staffing world in Atlanta.
Right, and Atlanta happens to be that number one. So you
love it. How nice for me.
Probably a coincidence.
How nice
right?
for me. Yeah.
So now, how do you... like you said earlier, like candidates now are being sought after, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you're not finding the the guy that's on monster.com, right? You're this person's somewhere, he's working somewhere, yeah. She's working somewhere, right?
Oh, it's so challenging. It's more challenging than people know. I think, IT staffing sometimes gets a bad rap. Oh, similar to real estate agents, if you ever had a good one, you really know how good they are. If you've ever had a bad one, you know how bad they can be. But our average candidate, and just anecdotally, will have 2 to 3 offers by the time they get to the offer phase with us. I think one of the things that gives us some unique positioning in Atlanta is that we're in an industry that is very exciting and a lot of people want to get into. And so if they're comparing opportunities with your traditional employers in Atlanta and they're comparing it with an opportunity in health IT where that's where the market's heading, it really gives us a competitive right. advantage too.
Now, are you finding that candidates are excited about the opportunity of moving here to Atlanta to be part of this? Or do you have to woo them from other places to Atlanta?
That's a good question. I'd say the majority of our candidates still are here in Atlanta. And I think the chamber has done an amazing job kind of attracting, there's 4 or 5 clusters, but health IT especially. And I think that as they build it, they will come to some extent. And so we still definitely target most of our candidates here because most of our customers won't relocate a developer that's in Wisconsin to Atlanta. They'll relocate a vice president of development, but they won't necessarily relocate people that we would
right.
place.
Now, what are the jobs that are specifically are the health IT?
I'm so glad you asked.
Do you happen to
I've been
know
ready
that?
To tell you that. I've been ready to tell you that. So I think that's
6 weeks.
Kevin's giving me the wink as I'm looking across there. Yeah, give
the
me your business card
class
later, Trish.
Is booked, right? What's the status of that 6 week training class?
That's right. So I think we in the white paper that I'll hopefully we can post out to your website. We did a lot of research over the last couple months around what are the hot IT skills and I'll give credit to the folks at CIO.com who helped us pull together some of this information as well. But number one skills that we're seeing is EMR build specialists, so people who are going to implement systems like Epic and really need to know how to configure those, similar to the SAP people in the past 10 years. And then healthcare analytics and data architecture is really a hot skill. And then skills that we see every day already, which are project management, application development, and QA. Those are the kind of 5 core areas that we're seeing a lot of growth in right now.
So now if you're in high school or thinking about going, you're getting ready to go to college, what classes should you be taking? Like what college classes?
That's probably a good question for Delise.
Yeah.
how do you get the younger person prepared, to enter the marketplace?
Yeah. Well, the core are information. Technology courses, computer science courses. I mean, that's fundamental and foundational to all of these.
Right, so it doesn't matter. And so that's the IT portion of this, right?
Yes, exactly. And then complementing that with healthcare courses, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take the combination of both of those curricula to prepare the workforce long term.
Yeah, and I would say if you haven't had Pat Williams on, I'm sure you have, right, to talk about that. She would probably be uniquely positioned to talk about the specifics of what is going to happen through that initiative that Delise mentioned earlier in the high schools. And we'll begin to, I think they're at the beginning stages, quite frankly, of beginning to build out the curriculum for high school students to make sure they're prepared.
Now, both of you obviously are women in technology. We've had women in technology people on through over the years in different areas. We've actually done a remote at the Women in Technology big event you guys do at the Aquarium. Are you seeing more women moving towards technology, or is there still a need to get more and more kind of girls engaged and get more women engaged in this?
So I'm vice president of women in technology here in Atlanta.
Okay, there you go. Nice?
and one of the things that I think WIT has done an amazing job at the last couple of years is they have a life cycle. We have a life cycle that we look at, and it starts with the middle school kids. And so we really target, we've now got programs for the middle school children, the high school kids, and then the young girls that are in colleges called WIT on Campus. And we're targeting at every one of those points the future pipeline of women in technology. And so, we have a Georgia First team that was placed in the world in terms of robotics this last year. They're awesome, right?
They were about to go off somewhere to another country, right?
Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
Yeah, I get like all warm inside when I think about them. They're absolutely fantastic. So I think WIT is uniquely really positioning to really get more girls interested in STEM careers in general. and has done a great job with that. But there's still so much more work to do because, you know, even my daughter, who my husband and I are both in technology, you know, really wants to be an artist and has no interest in, you know, in
She's maybe in doing, the rebellious stage.
That's right. That's right. And she'll probably be more successful than the two of us. But you know, there's no, you know, we live in the, you know, I think a lot of the programs sometimes will target more of the girls that are in areas that are underserved. And so even in my daughter's school, it's one of the best schools in Georgia, they don't talk a ton about technology. I'm just blown away by that. And I think as women, we didn't have a context for that. I mean, I didn't certainly ever think about getting into technology when I was graduating high school. Now I do. But I think that a lot of moms and a lot of women who have careers, you know, didn't have those opportunities when they're little. So I'm hoping that we're teaching our daughters to really look at that as a viable option for their careers.
Right. And I think that, like you said, you got to get them at the middle school, elementary school. You got to get them at least pique their interest by doing some of that fun stuff like the robotic stuff or maybe now app making or things that are relevant to their world every day.
The lady that cuts my hair for Christmas, I said, "What does your daughter want for Christmas?" She said she wants her own robot CPU. And she was building her robot. And I was like, "You're kidding me." And so her daughter comes and sweeps hair at the thing, and I'm like, "Show me your robot, and I'm going to send you this link, and you need to go to Georgia first." And you know, and I was so pumped by that.
Right. I mean, but that's the, I mean, exception. You're not saying you want to see, you know, the majority of the kids want that.
That's right. It was cool.
But I predict there's another channel for females to get more in health information technology, and it basically comes back from where are we going to draw? Where's our pool coming from? Mm-hmm. So we know that it's going to come from pure IT professionals, and it's going to come from clinical professionals. And the clinical side is dominated by females. So as more of the clinicians learn about health information technology and start gravitating toward this sector of healthcare, I think you're going to see more females in the industry.
Right. So they got to make a slight pivot then.
Yes.
And then so do you have any initiatives to help them make that pivot?
Well, at this point, I don't know of any. Obviously, the academic institutions are targeting both populations. But I can tell you at this point, this early in the game, the students that are gravitating to these fast-track programs are coming from the IT side, not from the clinical side.
Right.
So there is work to be done there.
Right. But also opportunity, I would think, if most of them are women to begin with.
Exactly. I did get an email from a clinician last week wanting to make this transition. And basically, she wants to get away from the 12-hour shift. She wants to get off of her feet. You know, she wants to have a 9-to-5 job and focus more on technology.
Yeah, because IT is 9-to-5, right?
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Let's ask Kevin.
Yeah. It beats the 12-hour shifts on your feet.
I'm sure there's more flexibility in the IT side.
Yes, you don't have to clean up puke on your scrubs at the end of the day. That's the only good. Yeah.
Now, I want to make sure that we really talk about this Tag Health IT Career Fair and where, you know, kind of the where it's at, how do we get involved, and what a person has to do to sign up and all that good stuff.
Well, I'll just tell you a little basic about it. It's coming up on Thursday, March the 28th. It'll be at Georgia State University in their Student Center. And we're funneling registration through TAG, the Technology Association of Georgia. And we're targeting, obviously, both health information technology employers and those candidates that are wanting to make this transition into health information technology.
And then what's going to happen at the fair? What goes on? Like, if I go there, what am I going to see?
Okay. Are you going?
Am I? I'll be there to make sure Kevin isn't
there. I think you should stream live from the job fair. That's
a
right.
Great idea. Well, I can tell you there will be a lot of energy and a lot of conversation. This is our second annual.
This is the second time you've ever done this?
Exactly. Oh. Yes.
And this is exciting.
It is exciting. And last year was just an overwhelming success. And the noise level in that conference room was just overwhelming. And we had recruiters at the booth tell us in our feedback, give us a break. Give us a chance to go eat lunch.
You know,
I was eating my sandwich and talking to potential candidates at the same time.
So is it just because of the economy? Is it just because there's candidates coming out of the woodwork?
It wasn't so much the volume of candidates, it was the quality of candidates that so impressed our employers there last year.
And how many employers did you have about?
We had 20 last 20. Year, but we're growing to 45 this year.
Wow, so double. More than doubled
yes.
in a year?
Yes,
wow.
yes. Too. And wow. that's how no encouraging
pressure.
We are.
No pressure. Yeah. but no, I mean, we've got our platinum sponsor this year is Grady Health Systems. Uh-huh. We've got companies like Northrop Grumman, which services the CDC account. We've got Navicure, Greenway Medical Technologies, Jackson Healthcare.
They got
Care
their
Stream
hands
Dental.
In everything Jackson Healthcare, right?
Yes, that's
how many,
right.
How many little groups are associated with them?
Oh, they've got, I guess, maybe a dozen companies under right. that Jackson Healthcare brand. Yeah,
yes,
definitely.
So that's fantastic. So was the second one a lot easier to get sponsors signed up after you had such support the first
yes,
one?
Yes,
I think
definitely.
We're, you know, we're at the same level that we were last year with a four-week window to go. So
right.
I think that's really encouraging
yeah.
in terms of in terms of being ahead.
You know,
of
Atlanta's
the
a last-minute town.
Yeah,
everybody
we are.
Shows up.
Yeah, and it's driving us nuts. Please yeah. register today. Yeah. Go online at tagonline.org and register today.
Now, so if I'm a candidate, how much does it cost? How does that work?
It's $10.
Oh, okay.
So very nominal fee.
Right.
And if that is a hardship for anyone, we will take care of the cost of that. So that's
wow.
not a there should not be a barrier
for
anyone.
Any candidate who wants to attend should
that's
be
right.
able to attend.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
then there's still opportunity for sponsors or you're
yeah,
sold out
there's
of sponsors?
Three level of sponsors. So we have the silver level, which is a $350 booth, the gold, which is a $500 booth, and the platinum, which gives you a little bit of a larger booth, more prominent presence and some speaking time.
Right.
It was a $1,000 booth.
Wow, very affordable. And like you said, we're the number one healthcare IT state in the world.
That's
the,
right.
Well, I know some of you guys say the world. Is it the world? Or we're saying,
well, we're saying
country?
The nation
yeah.
right
nation.
Now. Yeah, we're saying the nation.
So, okay, why don't we go around and you tell us your website for Agile, and then so make sure we get that out there.
Sure.
Too.
It's www.gotoagile.com.
And then the people you want to go there are who?
We want IT professionals to go there as well as IT employers that are hiring. And if they're hiring in health IT, even better.
All right. Delise?
www.well-changegroup.com. And employers to go there that would like to manage the people side of change to drive business results.
Uh-huh. And then one last time, if anybody wants to know more about what's going on at TAG and in the health space that you guys work in?
Yeah, it's www.tagonline.org. And then they can go into the TAG Health Society and register right from that page.
Good stuff. Well, thank you both for being part of the show.
Thank you.
All right.
This
you.
Is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Disruptive Healthcare.